RAC's Post-Op Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Bongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. What value is there in offering up your surgical skills and training as a volunteer overseas? A lot, if you listen to Merrin Pitcher, a general surgeon at Western Hospital in Footscray, Melbourne. Over the years, Merrin has volunteered in different parts of the world, removing herself from the trappings of the Western world to live and work in areas where medical, social and cultural differences can be profoundly different. It's challenging, she says, but for Merrin, the volunteering experience has sharpened her perspectives about surgery, given the wide gulf between access to treatments in developing countries compared to the West. Merrin's advice to anyone considering volunteering? Don't underestimate the challenges, but do investigate the opportunities, because despite the often extreme conditions, volunteering overseas is highly rewarding. Merrin Pitcher's latest assignment has been Papua New Guinea, the latest in a string of volunteering exercises in the developing world. So when and why did she get involved? Merrin Pitcher is talking to Chris Ashmore.
My first experience was a month working as the surgeon for the country of Kiribati, which is the old Gilbert Islands, in the middle of the year after I passed my fellowship exam. And that was really probably the thing that made me interested and understanding a little bit about practicing surgery in the third world. So that was the first time that I went away, and I've had the opportunity to do a number of other positions elsewhere. In particular, I had some experience doing short-term visits to Nauru, and the most recent time I'd been away was about 10 years ago, where I went with the college on their Pacific program to West Timor.
Always in the Pacific?
I also went to Pakistan after the earthquake. Again, that was through a college-driven program.
Well, your most recent journey took you to Wewak Borum General Hospital a few months ago in Papua New Guinea. Could you paint us a picture of the hospital and the geography around it and its distance, say, from Port Moresby?
Wewak is on the north coast of Papua New Guinea. It's the old Japanese airbase from during the war, and it's a flight of about an hour and a half or so from Port Moresby. You need to get there by plane. The only other way you can get there is by boat, but that's a fairly dangerous trip, I am told. Borum Hospital has a plaque from 1962, opened by the Australian Governor-General Sir Paul Hasluck, at the time when he was Minister for, I think, for Foreign Affairs. And so I think it was probably built in the 1960s, or the current building. It was then refurbished in 1990. It is in a most beautiful place. It is on the coast, it's on a peninsula, and it has a narrow peninsula so that the ocean is on either side, so that it has wards that are wooden and rotting and falling apart because of the climate, but they have wards either side of a walkway. And if you open the door at each end of each ward on either side, you can see the ocean to the east and the ocean to the west with palm trees. So it is the most gorgeous environment, but the hospital is old and it's rotting and literally falling apart.
What's the population of that area? Is it hard to
estimate? The population of Wewak itself, the town, is of the order of about 30,000 or 40,000 people. But Wewak, or Borum Hospital in Wewak, is the hospital which drains the whole district of the East Sepik province. And at the last census, that had something like 500,000 people plus. The people at Wewak told me that they had doubts about the veracity of the data, which is always an issue in Papua New Guinea, and they thought currently probably there were closer to 750,000 people that it drained. So that's one hospital that drains that whole area.
What does that mean then for the health outcomes for that local population, and what are the differences perhaps between Papua New Guinea and what we're used to here in Australia?
Well, it's very different. And my way of describing it, which I think, helped me psychologically was to really describe it as a parallel universe. It's a whole different world. Health outcomes are difficult to analyse. To me, it was very interesting that there was a whole different spectrum of disease presentation. They have a lot of violence. There's a lot of domestic violence. The majority of locals carry what are called bush knives, which to me just look like a machete, but they're a great big knife, which they use for cutting coconuts and grass and various things. But if they get angry, they cut each other. And so 25% plus of our workload was from bush knife injuries, which would cause severe soft tissue and bony damage. There was a reasonable amount of infectious disease, such as malaria, TB. We saw a bit of typhoid. So the disease spectrum was different, and so the outcomes are clearly slightly different. But within the constraints of what was available, the majority of people came into hospital and went out better than they came in. And so if people survived to get to the hospital, then the majority of them got better. Now, in terms of functional outcome, that's slightly different, but the majority of people came in, got better, and went home, which is really quite amazing given the constraints of the system.
How then would they get to the hospital? If it, with the rugged terrain and flying in, flying out, how would they get from communities to the hospital?
Well, again, that's a major challenge, I think, for the whole of Papua New Guinea and particularly for WEWAC, because the road system is poor and there are a lot of potholes everywhere. So that people would come generally by what were called PMVs, which is a public motor vehicle. So they were the local buses, and so they would come from the surrounding districts by those buses, which would often take 6 hours or more. There was a small amount of private vehicles from the outlying islands or further around the coast. People would come by boat. There were a couple of mission agencies there, in particular the Samaritan Air Pilots and Mission Aviation Fellowship. And they would occasionally get a call from an outlying village or community, and they would fly in, sometimes with a seaplane, transport the patient to the local airport and then to the hospital. And so sometimes that would take hours. And we would occasionally get patients by that means. And that was more particularly used for women with complications of delivery. And certainly we saw a few, you know, there was a child who came down with a compound fractured humerus and fractured femur from a place that would otherwise take about 2 days to come by if he came by road.
What did your assignment involve at the hospital, and how different are things performed compared to with what you're used to in Melbourne?
My task was specifically a non-clinical role, which is a little bit challenging for a clinical surgeon. The task was to be a supervising surgeon, and that is to mentor the current surgical staff and to support and teach. So the surgical establishment there has one consultant surgeon, a woman called Jenny Tovu, who is 2 years post her surgical qualifications, which were obtained locally. And so she works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as the only surgeon for the whole province. And she has 2 junior doctors supporting her, both of whom are in their 3rd postgraduate year, both who want to be surgeons but are not yet on the training program. So they work a 1-in-2 roster. So I must say I was very impressed by the quality of their work, particularly their excellent knowledge of the local environment, the local disease patterns, and what was available to them in that space. So it is quite challenging to go into an environment where nearly all the resources that you have available are not available. And it's sort of astounding to really say that you don't have simple things like oral analgesics, you don't have the availability to always have blood transfusion and those sorts of things, which we take completely for granted. So it was really particularly about encouraging them and supporting them in what they were doing and highlighting a few things that they could actually do a bit better within the constraints of what they had.
Well, leaving aside some of the medical challenges, and we did touch upon this, what are some of the other challenges, the cultural, the social, even the political, environmental challenges that you had to deal with when you were there?
There are many, of course, and part of that is just being in a strange place, but part of that is really the pleasure and the excitement of being in a different and what I would describe as a fairly crazy environment. The weather is always hot, usually humid. The hospital had fans in the ward, and theatre and the clinic rooms were air-conditioned, so that made life a bit more comfortable, but the accommodation I was in had a ceiling fan in the bedroom and that was it. So you would sit in the lounge room and just drip sweat because it was very hot. So that was a challenge. Culturally, it's a completely different world, and so it's important in a different environment to be very aware that it's a different environment and to listen and observe rather than try and change things, because that's never going to work. It was also particularly interesting because I was there during the time of the recent elections, which seemed to go on for weeks and weeks, partly because of the logistics of getting voting papers to people. And so it was interesting to hear the medical and nursing staff talk about their experiences in that space.
And going back to the medical challenges, what made it difficult for you to conduct surgery? I know we've spoken about this, but specifically to conduct surgery, what were the challenges there in that particular part of the world?
The challenges of doing surgery in WEWAC were really around the limited resources. And the particular thing that I found at the beginning was really the number of delays to surgery and cancellations. And significant number of people seem to be continually delayed to get their surgery, which in Australia would be done within hours as distinct with days. And I'm talking about things like compound fractures, people who are anemic with trauma, who were delayed. And most of the time those delays were due to a lack of availability of blood for transfusion. Many patients arrive at the hospital with severe anemia, partly from the fact that they've bled from their trauma, but also from chronic malaria or chronic malnutrition. And we needed to have blood available for those operations. There is no functional blood bank, so that people needed to get their relatives to come and donate blood. And often the relatives might have to come from days away, or alternatively the relatives might turn up and there were no staff to take the blood at the time, or there were no reagents to test whether the blood was positive for HIV or hepatitis. I'm told that of the blood supply at WEWAC, 20% of the blood tested was not usable because of HIV or hepatitis. So those were some of the constraints. We had times where we weren't able to even get a plain X-ray. There was no histology available. Blood tests were rarely consistent.
Well, despite those challenges, of course, the time you spent there helped improve, I would imagine, quite a lot of the people in the area. Do you feel the improvements that your contribution made to the community?
Look, I think that's hard to measure. And I think that anyone who's worked in this sort of environment knows the anxiety about, are you actually doing anything useful at all? And I think from a point of view of what I achieved, it was really around providing support to the surgical team, to be able to support and encourage Jenny as her position as the one surgeon. It was good to be able to spend time with the two juniors because it's so busy, they've had very little formal teaching or even informal teaching in that space. So to actually be able to give them some time and encouragement and to get the basics right, I think that's what I've achieved in that period of time.
And what did you get from the experience, Merin? Not just this assignment, but volunteering in general. And has it brought you a different perspective, perhaps, in your work back home?
I think I've learnt a lot. I think I've always had a reasonably broad view of surgery and medicine in particular. And I think it's reinforced to me how well off we are in Australia and the Western world. To me, it was a really good opportunity to have some enforced time out, to really get back to what are the basics of medicine and surgery. What is it about surgery in particular that makes it a worthwhile career? It's always nice to get away from some of the administrative and other responsibilities that you have, to have some space to just reflect on what you're doing. So to me, it reinvigorated my love of my career.
And what would you say to anyone else thinking of volunteering abroad? Is it something you'd encourage them to do?
Oh, absolutely. If you have the opportunity, I would encourage you to look into it. Don't underestimate the challenges involved, both from a personal and professional point of view, but it's a very rewarding experience.
Merrin Pitcher, General Surgeon at Western Hospital in Melbourne. RAC's Post-Op Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Buongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. You can reach the Buongiorno National Network on +613 9863 3111.